Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 137 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Got some upcoming dates. Some of these are stand-up. September 3rd, I'm headlining the Comedy Underground in Seattle, Washington. September 9th, Competitive Erotic Fanfiction at Helium in Portland, Oregon. September 27th, Competitive Erotic Fanfiction at the Tacoma Comedy Club, Tacoma, Washington. October 25th, Union Hall in Brooklyn. Stay tuned, I think, for Philly and D.C. and also Salem, Oregon, most likely on September 8th. But today's show was recorded August 16th, 2015 at the Virgil in L.A. This is round one. It's a short one featuring Jackie Cation, Joseph Scrimshaw, and Phoebe Bottoms reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy.
Who's brought a prepared piece, Mr. Joseph Scrimshaw.
Hello. This is a little something that I sometimes think about when I'm alone at home. Please enjoy. Harry Potter was alone. He had just got home from a long day working at the Ministry of Magic. His wife Ginny and his kids were out fugglewumping. Fugglewumping was a funny wizarding term for eating at Applebee's. Harry sighed and pulled out his magic iPhone. iPhones in the wizarding world weren't that different from normal iPhones. They just didn't drop calls as often. Harry looked at the date on his phone. 2015. Wow, Harry thought, in a British accent that I'm not going to do. I can't believe all these years have passed. Harry had just celebrated his 35th birthday. He was supposed to be getting together with Ron and Hermione for drinks tonight, but they had sent an owl to cancel. And honestly, Harry was fucking thrilled. At this point in his life, canceled social plans were one of the most exciting, sensual things that could happen to him. With a flick of his wand, Harry threw his pants off his body and flopped down on the couch. He looked down at his flabby, middle-aged body. He pulled his shirt up and stared at his doughy alabaster gut. It reminded him of Dobby. Dobby the dead house elf. Ah, the glory days. He used to be the boy who lived. Now he was the man who ate too many Hot Pockets. He rubbed his ample belly and thought of his youthful prowess, riding his broomstick, shooting his Patronus out of his powerful wand, catching a snitch right in his mouth. Jesus, Harry thought, almost everything I did as a kid sounds really fucking sexual. His mind drifted and his hand lowered down his body, gently, with all the care and grace one would use to introduce themselves to a hippogriff. Harry introduced his hand to his own penis. It did not respond, but it would. Oh, yes, it would. Harry flicked his wand, his actual magic wand, not his penis, which he was holding in his other hand. He flicked his wand at his 60-inch Samsung flat screen. The titillating red glow of Netflix popped up on the screen. Harry quickly navigated to the Netflix category that he was looking for. Critically acclaimed movies from the 1990s that also have boobs in them. The first movie in the list was Wild Things. Harry wasn't sure why that movie belonged in the critically acclaimed section, But it would do. Oh, yes, it would do. Harry gestured with his wand, and the film played for 2 seconds before it started buffering. Fuck, Harry said aloud in a British accent. He grasped his little chosen one and toyed with himself in frustration. Still no reaction. His eyes darted up to the screen, still buffering. Only 12%. His penis wasn't even at 10. As an adult, Harry had learned there were many spells he could cast to instantly erect his flaccid penis. Engorgio Phallus, Wankus Suddenness, Axio Shame. Why, a wizard could achieve an orgasm in mere seconds if you used Phoenix Tears as lube. There was so much that Dumbledore had not told him. Harry pointed his rigid wand at his recalcitrant cock. But no, no. It had been years since Harry had pleasured himself without magic. He needed to do this old school, muggle style. Harry threw his wand across the room, closed his eyes, and stroked his manhood with abandon, repeatedly mumbling, "I solemnly swear I'm up to no good. I solemnly swear I'm up to no good." But try as he might, nothing was up at all. Wild Things was only at 22%. Harry knew his physical technique was flawless. It was his mental game he needed to work on. He tried thinking of his wife, Ginny. He tried thinking of Hermione, Luna, Dolores Umbridge. Hell, he even tried thinking of Hagrid, just in case that did something. Nope. Harry stroked and stroked. Wild Things buffered and buffered. A text popped up on his iPhone from Ginny. Salmonella outbreak at Applebee's. Kids and I will be home in 5 minutes. Harry almost wept in frustration. He thought of giving up, but goddammit, he was a Gryffindor. The one thing he always had was his bravery. If he could pull the sword of Godric Gryffindor out of the sorting hat in the Chamber of Secrets, then by God, he could jerk himself off before his wife got home from Applebee's. Harry closed his eyes and thought back to all his adventures. He thought of his lost youth. More than anything, he thought of the 90s. The 90s! He moaned as his stubborn penis suddenly strengthened in his confident hand. Out of nowhere, Wild Things had buffered up to 42%. Harry let his mind flood with the cultural touchstones of his generation, not only of the wizarding world, but the muggle world as well. Oh, Smash Mouth! Harry cried in pop culture ecstasy. Friends, Frasier, Seinfeld, oh! Kramer's entering Jerry's apartment! Kramer's entering Jerry's apartment! Harry wailed. Wild Things was at 69%. Oh, Teletubbies! Windows 98! Pikachu! Harry screamed. Wild Things was at 92%. Harry's rock-hard wizard tool quivered with delight. Truly, there was nothing more powerful than nostalgia. Oh, GoldenEye 64! Nirvana! Nickelodeon's Kids' Choice Awards! Motherfucking AOL disc! Closing time! And with those magic words spoken, Wild Things reached 100%, and Harry exploded in a spasm of unspeakable joy. And in that blissful moment, Harry Potter knew yes, yes, he really was a 90s kid. Thank you.
Joseph Scrimshaw. Thanks, man. Keep it going for Phoebe Bottoms.
Hi, team. Quick preface. In the 90s, Cabbage Head, Ivy League egghead named Aaron Sorkin made the West Wing and gave me the only impression I can do, which is of Mrs. Landingham, Martin Sheen's homely school marm assistant. Enjoy.
My name is Dolores Landingham, otherwise known affectionately by my nickname, Mrs. Landingham. I am the personal secretary to President Josiah Jed Bartlett. Although some may describe me as a foreground marginal presence in the White House, my duties are many and of great significance. They include finding the president's pens and providing a service that I would only call an executive fuck sleeve. When there's a hostage situation, a national disaster, or something of that sort, I help the president take the edge off. I suppose I'm what the kids these days would describe as a presidential cum dumpster here in the West Wing. Although I'm no longer the same spring chicken I was when I first met him some 40-odd years ago, he insists that the kind of pleasure derived from our activities is much like wearing me on his dick like a familiar old boot. Tonight is an important evening as the president is preparing for his State of the Union address to the nation. I'm sitting at my desk outside the Oval Office, sorting memos and feeling a little somber when Charlie, the president's young assistant, passes by.
Mrs. Landingham, you sure seem down for someone this close to the action on State of the Union Day.
Well, Charlie, I say with a distant look in my eyes, I tend to get a little blue around the State of the Union. It reminds me of the twin sons I lost in Vietnam Christmas Eve 1970. I miss my boys. Cool, Mrs. Landingham. I'll see you in the limo. I got back to my work, dotting I's and licking envelopes, when I hear a beastly groan from behind the thick wooden doors of my boss's office. A truly experienced secretary always knows when she's needed. Mr. President, it's not very becoming of the leader of the free world to be laying on the floor of the Oval Office, rattling his genitals around, screaming like a cow in labor. Jed tugs a few more times and emits another frustrated groan. He's in a mood. It would be best to start the proceedings. Perhaps you'd like some assistance, Mr. President.
Perhaps I would, Mrs. Landingham.
He crawls over to me, his flag at half-mast. I pull down my nylons and remove the prescription mothballs from my vagina. Jed begins running his hands up and down my legs, tracing the iridescent varicose veins on my diaphanous calves, as if he were reading the Constitution written in Latin Braille. He studies my tube body, my tapering head, my rogue chin whiskers, then gazes into my small black watery eyes.
Not for nothing, Mrs. Landingham, but you have the sexual prowess of a prawn.
Why, thank you, sir. Why don't you stand up and let me attend to you? He rises to his feet and takes the familiar air of a professor in a lecture hall.
There's a grand tradition of our forefathers draining their balls all over these hollowed seal. Why, this very room was designed as an oval to best accommodate all the ferocious circle jerks required to move a democracy forward.
Yes, sir, you've mentioned that an abundance of times.
Am I boring you, Mrs. Landingham?
Oh, tut, tut. Finish unsheathing yourself. You have to be dressed and ready to go in an hour, and between my bad hip and the time it takes my moistening gel to take effect, we'll be cutting it very close. With great care, I lowered down to my knees and gently ladled the president's bird eggs into my pursed mouth. His pink Irish member unfurled like a party whistle, grazing the side of my rapidly thinning bangs and tapping the side of my glasses. It leaves a milky smear of pre-ejaculate. He's frothing already. There must be quite a load in there, I think to myself. I have always been impressed by his endowment. Then I don't suppose you become the commander-in-chief with an acorn buried in a Brillo pad. He notices me gazing at his member. Is it too long? It's as long as my life, sir. He reclaims his nuggets and steadily brings me back to my feet before bending me over the Davenport. Needless to say, giving birth to two happy, healthy twin boys had obliterated any tightness and turned my nethers into a windsock. I miss my boys. He's able to fit the entirety of his arm in me and wears me like a hand puppet for a while before finally penetrating me. His executive branch slaps the side of my vagina like he's ringing a dinner bell made out of a roast beef sandwich. Before long, he gets a serious look on his face And as his front tail nudges the tumbleweeds that have replaced my reproductive organs, he asks, "Did you bring Washington's pen, Mrs. Landingham?" "Of course I did, sir." "Well then, I fish around my girdle pocket and pull out the pen George Washington used to sign the Constitution. Flip over, sir. I begin churning his anal butter." "Whoa, Nelly," he shrieks as I give his prostate the old John Hancock. Clearly Toby had not seen it was his turn on the chore wheel to trim the president's back pussy. As bits of feathers from the quill become ensnared in the rather unkempt thatch of brambles protecting the most important asshole in the world. Perhaps Toby had a hard time seeing past his own Jewy rat face to notice it was his turn. The jury's still out on me with Jews. The president rammed his poop chute against the pen so hard, I'm afraid he'll prolapse again. And who would have to staple his gland back in there? I'll tell you, it probably wouldn't be Toby, that draft-dodging shrimp scorner. His pace quickens. "Talk me off. This is new to the routine. We've always exchanged a quip here and there, but I have never been a verbose copulator. Talk you off? Sir, I don't know what to say. Anything." "Okay, well, I dressed them differently, but they still did everything together." They went off to medical school together. And then their 2 years were up, and of course, their lottery number came up at the same time. They didn't want a deferment to finish med school. Their father and I begged them, but they wanted to go where people needed doctors. Their father and I begged them, but you can't tell kids anything. So they joined up as medics, and 4 months later, they were penned down in Da Nang and killed by enemy fire. That was Christmas Eve, 1970. They were so young. It's hard when that happens so far away, because with the noise and the shooting, they had to be so scared. It's hard not to think that right then, they needed their mother. I miss my boys. "Jesus, stop! I'm sorry, sir. Is that not what you wanted?" "No, not even a little bit. Good Lord, Mrs. Landingham, tell me something to make me come." "Right. I think you should be on the dime, sir." "Let's just say, I wasn't wrong about that hefty load." He moans and ejaculates as his ropey cum curls down. He takes notice of my glum face. "Mrs. Landingham, wasn't that good for you?" "Of course it was, sir. Don't mind me. I just miss my boy." Thank you.
Phoebe Bottoms. Keep it going for Jackie Cation.
All right. Mine starts in the 90s, you guys. But it doesn't take place there. We all know that corporations are people. So let's talk briefly about the unrequited Time Warner AOL merger. Yep, this is what happened. Here's the timeline. October 1999, Shanghai. They met in Shanghai because it was a celebration of the 50th anniversary of the People's Republic of China in Tiananmen Square. There were 50 windows. There were 50 shades. There were 50 chairs and one big boardroom table. Time Warner was seated at it, but AOL was in charge. He walks the length of the room. Shit, I forgot my phone. All right. Picture a modem dialing up.
Where's Sean Patton when we need him?
Exactly. Oh, right, he could have done the sound. AOL strips down his Hong Kong-made suit. AOL looks at Time Warner, a handsome, together, older gentleman. The thought of Time Warner's experience with all the varieties of broadcasting make AOL's mouth water. Time Warner watches AOL walk toward him, disrobing that youthful, vigorous, flexible new communication style. And Time Warner rises from the table only to fall to his knees and says there's an inevitability of a convergence of old and new media. And he begins to suck. AOL looks out the window onto the Shanghai skyline, the recently finished 88-story Jin Mao Tower. At almost 1,400 feet, the tall doesn't make AOL feel inadequate, but the 6-acre circumference, the diameter almost makes him lose his heart on. But Time Warner keeps sucking and he forgets entirely about the view. This is where you could think to yourself, you've got mail. January 2000, New York. 3 months later, after a lot of dial-up, Time Warner making mixed CDs, he tells a story of a frustrating and exciting night spent downloading Ms. Jackson's, if you're nasty, over LimeWire and BearShare. They had cybersex so much in private chat room on AOL that he could type fluently with his left hand. The chat room cybersex was new to Time Warner. He didn't know where to meet him. He ended up in a public chat room with a lot of age, sex, location questions coming at him. He was scared but turned on. Maybe he'd cybersex with more than just AOL. What was the name of this room? Teen Scene? Then AOL IM'd him, and they went into a private chat room under their cyber names. AOL was calling himself Big Rem. And Time Warner couldn't think of anything, so he went with Older Holder. AOL walked into the boardroom. The curtains were drawn so they couldn't see out of this top floor of the World Trade Center. He gets right down to it. We're gonna fuck. I'm an operating guy. All I do is worry about how the hell we're gonna make it work. What do we have to do now? The baloney that goes on with merging companies? It's ridiculous. He gestures to Time Warner. Come here. Time Warner gets up from the table and says, you want to do some of the stuff we IM'd about? AOL grabs Time Warner by the face and they start making out, ripping each other's clothes off. Ties, jackets, belts, and shoes go flying. Oh my God. AOL almost knocks Time Warner's Mac G3 off the table. He's distracted enough to stop what he's doing and push it into the middle of the table. When he turns back, AOL is naked. A fine young upstart company worth $224 billion. He was sleek and hard, and he had so much attitude, and he turned to Time Warner, and AOL said, I want you to fuck me. I want you to pretend that you're buying me. We're in this together, Older Holder. We're going to combine the nation's top internet service provider with the world's top media conglomerate, and we're going to make beautiful music. Time Warner kissed him hard, turned him around, bent him over, and said, the internet really has arrived. January 2001. They don't see each other for over a year. For a year, AOL integrated broadband and cybersex was crazy. But in January of 2001, the FCC, like a bouncer who doesn't have to clean the bathroom, said they could date. And they ran with it. Hell, they said they were going to get married. They met up in that year all around the world, fucking and furiously making out and planning. Time Warner asked if they can do it on an actual, not virtual, pile of money. AOL hems and haws and has some trouble getting it all together, but creates the illusion that he has it. It helps when Time Warner starts nosing around AOL's assets. Not too deep, just enough to make it look like they would never hit bottom. They marry. They get into a routine of sex and building their world together. They love each other. They believe in each other, but they don't always get each other. December of 2001. It starts getting rocky, you guys. AOL is heard telling his best girlfriend, culturally, we're just like night and day. He's a bit of a stick in the mud. A little by the book for me. We're fighting a lot. He pauses. The sex is still pretty good. He's good at what he does. And I can usually just blow him and he mellows out for a second. But I can't see it working forever. He's just too old school for me, I think. And by December of 2001, Time Warner is getting sick of the spending spree that AOL has taken him on. He's talking to his best girlfriend and he says, it feels like I'm just a wallet. I might have misread the dot-com bubble. I love the guy, but he's flying by the seat of his pants. The legs have come out from his business model, which is sexy as hell. But I'm just paying his student loans and buying him sweaters now. And he's not even making dinner. April 2002. AOL stock falls to lowest since 1998. Both start realizing they're not as good together as they were apart. They might have just stayed fuck buddies and gotten meetings and made some deals, but without the commitment. July of 2002, the SEC starts investigating AOL. The cops get called on some domestic disturbance calls. Time Warner is yelling at AOL about lies and cheating, about how increasing the headcount isn't going to fix this. Or is it? They go into counseling. The next 7 years are a stop and start relationship. They try to have kids. Luckily, AOL is barren and a man. They get a dog. They get a dog, they start a garden, they separate, they get back together, they have wild sex in Shanghai to try to recapture those wild early days, May of 2009. Time Warner separates from AOL and really starts calling him a bitch. In the divorce proceedings, AOL cites Time Warner's previous child support paying for print and cable TV as part of their irreconcilable differences. When they break up, a close friend of Time Warner is quoted in a gossip rag called Fortune Magazine. The aggressive and many-setting arrogance of AOL horrified the more staid corporate Time Warner. You know, cooperation and promised synergies failed to materialize as mutual disrespect came to color their relationship. The media was getting mean. TMZ started following AOL to clubs and bars. AOL was overheard complaining that he was just on a long string of young tech loves for Time Warner. Time Warner is already checking out Twitter's ass. Time Warner grumpily was heard to say that AOL couldn't even be bothered with a reach around anymore. December of 2009. Divorce complete. AOL is sitting in a bar on Fairfax, the Dime, it's called, telling anyone that'll listen that he was the king of dial-up. The bartender's pretty sure he's just a prostitute who knows how to please lonely old ladies, taking him for a monthly email charge they could get for free. But he knows that he's really still just phoning it in. Epilogue, 2015. AOL spent a few years at the gym and is starting to feel better about himself. He got a little counseling. He now takes meetings and goes out to nice restaurants instead of dive bars. He's treating himself with some dignity. And he's seeing someone, you guys. Someone 9 years younger than himself. Now he's the experienced gentleman. And a young, virile Verizon is looking for love. And respectability. And AOL. And as Verizon said with his pickup line, there's an inevitability of a convergence between mobile users and online communities. I wish them a happy life together.
Jackie Cation. Round one competitors back up to vote for a winner. All the way to the mic for these round one competitors. All right, so I'm going to remind you of what everybody read, and then we will vote on a winner. We started with Joseph Scrimshaw with Harry Potter, then Phoebe Bottoms with The West Wing, and Jackie Cation with the Time Warner AOL merger. So pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Joseph Scrimshaw, Harry Potter. Phoebe Bottoms, The West Wing. And Jackie Cation with the Time Warner AOL merger. Your round one champion, Phoebe Bottoms, let her hear it. Thanks, everybody. Big round of applause for all of your round one competitors once again.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 138 next week. And if you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. For more details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.